I'm going to speak about criteria to guide appropriate infant feeding choices in the context of HIV, in particular in South Africa, which I'll speak about the slight differences between South Africa and other countries. Basically, things that this audience, I'm sure, all knows: postnatal transmission postnatal transmission of HIV accounts for at least half of all the mother-to-child transmission. What's happening, though, is as the intrapartum antiretroviral regimens improve, we're seeing that the proportion of infants who are being infected postnatally is going up. Not the absolute number, obviously, but the proportion of HIV transmission. Postnatal HIV transmission can be eliminated through exclusive replacement feeding. However, we know that in places like Africa, there's a substantial risk to not breastfeeding under unsafe conditions. Therefore, making an appropriate choice for the woman as to what her conditions are and what should be the appropriate infant feeding choice for her is really important. Many of you have probably all seen the WHO recommendation. This is the most recent one. Avoidance of all breastfeeding if replacement feeding is acceptable, feasible, affordable, sustainable, and safe. We call it AFAS. Otherwise, exclusive breastfeeding for the first months of life is recommended, followed by early breastfeeding cessation as soon as it's feasible and when conditions for safe replacement feeding can be met. So that it's no longer, you know, by 6 months. It's whenever safe replacement can be met. But though this sounds really great, these guidelines are really difficult to apply in an operational setting. What does a counselor know about what's meant by safe? What's meant by feasible? A counselor with a woman in front of her. How does she sort of translate these very nice international guidelines into reality of someone sitting in front of her who's trying to make a choice? And so there's really been no assessment to date of the implementation of the WHO guidelines in operational settings and the consequences on infant outcome. Just a little background, the PMTCT program at the time of the study, this is important because this was several years ago in South Africa, consisted of antenatal VCT, infant feeding counseling, single dose of nevirapine for the mother and infant, rapid testing of the infant at 12 months. The infant feeding counseling was and is still not good. It usually occurs once or twice during antenatal, generally when they first find out that they're positive. Needless to say, I'm not sure that infant feeding is on their mind at that point. And is mostly given by lay counselors. They do offer free formula milk provided for 6 months for women choosing not to breastfeed. They didn't at the time offer anything for women who are choosing to breastfeed, any supplements, food, or other commodities. Women choosing to breastfeed were advised to stop between 3 or 4 months, which at the time was a WHO recommendation. Just so you know, this program has changed substantially between when we did the study and now. They're now also moving to dual therapy, part for highly active antiretroviral therapy for women who qualify. They're testing infants at 6 weeks with PCR. And they're considering in the latest strategic plan to start to offer food parcels for women who choose breastfeeding. That has not been implemented yet, but we're hopeful. The aims and objectives of this study were to identify criteria that could be used to guide appropriate infant feeding choices, so real questions that could be asked of mothers, not just asking a mother, is it feasible? To assess the appropriateness of infant feeding amongst HIV-positive women in our three sites, and to determine the effect of inappropriate choices on HIV-free survival. Just to move, we have three sites that we've been doing a lot of this work. They were purposefully chosen so that Umlazi is a peri-urban township with very high HIV prevalence. You can see that 44% is not a typo. Parle is a peri-urban sort of rural farming community with very low prevalence and very high resources. Whereas Umlazi sort of your traditional African sort of inner city, like township. Rietvlei, or Mzimkulu, is one of the poorest rural areas of South Africa, has about 28% prevalence, and an infant mortality rate of 100, almost 100 per thousand and rising, actually. So that we had three very different areas of South Africa that were purposely chosen so that we could look at it in different types of places. I'm going to sort of go through the research design. It was a prospective cohort study. We followed infants until 36 weeks. We had altogether a sample of 665 HIV-positive women. We collected data from trained field researchers at 3 weeks, 24 weeks and 36 weeks. And also we got infant feeding data from community health workers every 2 weeks until 9 weeks, and then monthly until 36 weeks. Just so you know, the community health workers did not know the HIV status of these women. They were just asking feeding. Our data collectors didn't know and spoke about disclosure and all kinds of other things. We assessed infant feeding using a 24-hour and a previous three-day recall, as well as some, they were mostly yes-no questions about what this infant had eaten, but we also asked about breastfeeding and other feeding in the past, so we would catch if, you know, the child had ever been breastfed. We did HIV transmission using dried blood spots, heel prick of the baby at 3, 24, and 36 weeks, and viral loads of the mother at 3 and 36 weeks. Just to show you what these different sites look like, you can see that replay on the right, which is our poor rural area. You're looking at, you know, 3% of women having piped water into the house, 2% flush toilets, 12% electricity. You can see that the resources are much better, though still not 100% in the other two sites. What was concerning is if you look at, having just looked at the socio-demographics of these sites, and you look at the intentions of women, this is before delivery, what was their intention? What choice had they made after their very limited counseling? And you'll see that in Parle, the over 75% of the women were choosing formula feeding. They did have reasonably good resources, so that's not necessarily inappropriate. In Umlazi, they had 70% choosing exclusive breastfeeding. And that you'll see in Rietvlei that even though they had really no resources at all, that 60% of women were choosing formula feeding, which clearly shouldn't be the case if you're going along with what you think the guidelines might be. So what's interesting about these places is that Parle is in the Western Cape province, which is like the state of the Western Cape. The Western Cape promotes the formula option because the province in general is better resourced, and so the health providers promote formula choice as a choice. Whereas in Umlazi, any of you who know breastfeeding have probably heard of Professor Kavadia, Professor Katsoudis, or Professor Rollins, who do a lot of HIV. That's where they live. Needless to say, they're strong breastfeeding advocates, even in the context of HIV, and so you'll see a substantial number of women choosing breastfeeding in that location. Whereas Rietvlei is sort of out there and nobody cares. And so basically, if you offer, I think Rietvlei offers us to know that if you just offer women free formula without a lot of counseling, how many women will take it? And what we see is that that more will take it, 60%, which is concerning in a place like Rietvlei. What we did is we looked at a lot of data that we had and tried to pick five criteria that we might work with as sort of a criteria that would help us operationalize the WHO definitions. And you'll see that we chose pipe water in the house or the yard, fuel, which was either electricity, gas, or paraffin. What are other kinds of fuel? We would have wood and would be the primary one that isn't in that list. Main income, so that there's a provider that has regular employment in the house, use of a working refrigerator, and most important, that they disclose the HIV status. What's concerning about this is you'll see that except for HIV status, these bars are essentially all the same. So that whether a woman had water or electricity or there was employment to purchase formula, it didn't at all guide their choice. So that resources were not guiding their choice, which is very concerning. Only disclosure, but we see that more formula feeders had disclosed their HIV status, and that was the only significant difference. So do the UNICEF guidelines improve HIV-free survival? And we tried to look at the five criteria and see how that predicted HIV-free survival, which is this slide. We did actually a substantial analysis of all different ways of these various potential factors. I'm only going to show you three because otherwise you'd have one of those slides you couldn't read, you know, with a billion little numbers. But basically you'll see there that when we're choosing the criteria, we wanted to balance, the number of women who would qualify, you know, for formula against the survival. You know, you didn't want something that was so restrictive that only 5% of the women qualified. for where you would, quote, qualified to sort of choose formula. But you obviously didn't want, you obviously wanted to sort of balance that against survival, because you didn't want to be putting children at risk as well from formula. So you can see that 52% of the women had piped water in the house or the yard, and also about 50% had piped water and fuel. And you can see that the adjusted hazard ratio was 0.5, so this is the protective ratio. When we got to piped water, fuel, and disclosure, it was 30%, 33, almost 33% of women still had those three factors, and so so that formula might have been an appropriate choice for them. And you'll see that this one, you then drop your HIV-free survival down to 0.3, which is quite good. Adding a fridge or, it doesn't show down there at the bottom, but there's actually, it says, adding a fridge or the employment doesn't substantially improve the HIV-free survival. So it stays around 0.3 when you add those other criteria, but it drops the people who are eligible down to about 10%. So that we chose those three criteria, piped water in the house or yard, fuel and disclosure of HIV status, as our three questions that we could use to operationalize infant feeding. And then what we did is we looked at women who met the criteria and their choice, and then what happened to their infants in terms of HIV-free survival. So that when I say this, we're looking here at HIV transmission or death. So they were either positive or dead at 9 months. And so basically our reference group are the women who met the choice, the three criteria, for and chose to formula feed. And that's our reference group. Then we looked at women who didn't meet the criteria and chose to breastfed. You can see that their risk of being dead or having transmission was 2.74. compared to the reference group. You'll see that the women who did not meet the criteria, so they didn't have those three things, and they chose to formula feed, a lot of our replay ladies, their risk goes up to 3.45. And that when they met the criteria, so that in theory they could have chosen formula feeding and chose to breastfeed, it's 2.72. So you'll see that the resources don't really matter once you choose to breastfeed, which makes sense because, you know, you're breastfeeding, so what your water source is shouldn't have as much of an influence. But what we were concerned about is that clearly the group that sort of chose formula when they didn't have the resources were at highest risk. Okay, don't be funny on me. There we go. So what we see is that UNICEF guidelines are not being effectively operationalized, that home circumstances of the mothers were not at all being used to influence their choice of feeding, which is very concerning. And we do see that these choices are impacting outcome. We saw that 31% of women chose to breastfeed did have access to these three things, and that there was a risk of for their child. Compared to women who had the same conditions and chose to formula feed. So that there are a considerable number of infections that could have been prevented if women had chosen to formula feed. However, we saw that choosing formula in the absence of these criteria was the most risky. So that's it is a real balancing act. And especially when you get to a place like Reedflay, only three of the 93 women in Reedflay who chose to formula feed met the criteria. And that the inappropriate choice, we're concerned that an inappropriate choice in a rural area may carry more risk, because those women are getting water from rivers, they're using wood for fuel, it's just much, much more difficult. Whereas a woman in a township area who doesn't have it in her house or her yard is probably just walking down the street and still getting it out of a tap. But then she's having to store it, which increases risk, but it's not as risky as getting it from rivers. What's also, I think, important is that Reedflay is most similar to other parts of Africa. And so that when you're talking about South Africa being very well resourced, when you're talking about other parts of Africa, you're thinking that they all look like Reedflay. And so what does this mean for other parts of Africa? So what are our conclusions? Is that the guidelines for WHO need to be applied in a practical manner. Counselors need real questions that they can ask moms, not just is this feasible, is this safe in your environment. They need real questions that they can ask people. We need advocacy to increase women's access to conditions to safe formula so that HIV survival can be improved. But without these these opportunities that the choice of breastfeeding is better, is a better option. And so I think that that's what's really important in the message, especially when you think of other low-resource settings. I think the other thing to recognize is because South Africa does give free formula, I think income, as you noticed, having employment was not very predictive. I can't say that that would not be the case in other parts of Africa where they don't have free formula, so that income and ability to purchase formula might be a factor. So we feel that this should be replaced and repeated in a place where there isn't free formula available. Just to acknowledge my co-authors, in particular, the first author was Tanya Daugherty, and she, this is really her thesis, but she was due to have a baby on Monday, so she isn't here. I would also like to say I added we always just acknowledge the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. I actually went this morning and added PEPFAR to that because I felt that PEPFAR maybe got a pretty bad rap on in the opening session, and I wanted people to know that PEPFAR is actually doing many good things. They do support research on, like ours, on breastfeeding and supporting breastfeeding appropriately, and they do a lot of work with systems. If you see the rest of the research coming out of this project, it's all about improving systems. So I threw that in this morning because I felt they deserved at least some good press for what they are doing this group. Okay. Sure, go ahead. Oh yeah, I'm sorry, I forgot to mention that. The rate of exclusive breastfeeding is exceedingly low. So even in those breastfeeders, you're getting a lot of mixed feeding. Exclusive formula feeding group, we had about 30% who still mixed fed. Okay. No, even once. This was choice and what happened. And we did actually do some additional analysis, which is in the manuscript. This has been published in AIDS in August, if you want a copy. And in that, we also talked about having the criteria and failure for exclusivity. And because we obviously felt that was the mechanism by which they were going to have the reduced HIV free survival, and that did appear to be one of the mechanisms by which they were doing it, is that if they chose formula and don't have resources, they're going to breastfeed in the middle of the night. They're not going to get up and hike to get the water and the fuel and whatever. And so, and that did appear to be the case. So if you're, it's Daugherty is the first author, and it's the August Journal of August edition of AIDS. This is published. Yes. We've got two qualitative papers, focusing mostly on trying to get women on the exclusive breastfeeding, barriers and that. Those have been published in the bulletin of WHO, and where's the other one? I can't remember, but they're under. But if you just search for my name or Daugherty, you'll find those two qualitative papers. What we found is that mixed feeding is the norm in South Africa, and we're really battling against that norm. And so that women if they don't disclose, then they're under enormous pressure to mix feed from the family. So that if they're trying to choose exclusive breastfeeding, people want to give the baby bottles. If they're trying to exclusively formula feed, people are accusing them of treating the baby badly because they're not breastfeeding and every baby should be breastfed, don't you know, it's healthier. So that those are the kinds of things. But there are also a substantial stigma. And so one of ours is actually a quote, that the title is, "When they see the tins, they see me laugh." Okay, when they see me carrying the tins, they laugh, because the tins are known now that women who are positive get the tins, and so then there's so that people will try to hide it. So that there's really a pressure both ways, and I think we're facing that in South Africa. There's a huge, huge gap. All right. Okay, you can always reach me. My email is djackson, at uwc.ac.za. So you can always email me, and also look for the paper in ACE. Thank you so much. I apologize again that I coughed.